This is the story of the murder of Sheriff Granville Hayden and Maine's only lynching when his murderer, Jim Cullen, was hanged, as related to me by my grandfather. Sheriff Hayden and my grandfather had met on the Castle Hill Road one day in the spring during the spring breakup when the road was soft. In those days when teams met on the road under those conditions, someone had to unhitch, lead his horse to the side, and move his pung out into the soft snow to let the other team by. And that's what Sheriff Hayden and my grandfather had to do, and afterwards leaned over the back of their pungs and talked for a while. When they had finished talking, Sheriff said to my grandfather, "Goodbye, George. If I don't see you again, I'll see you in heaven." My grandfather never forgot that, because only a few days later, Hayden was killed by a fellow named Jim Cullen that had a camp at the end of the West Chapman Road at a place now called Swanback Clearing, or the Killing Ground, over 7 miles from Mapleton. It seems that Cullen hadn't paid for boots bought in the Mapleton store. The sheriff was given a warrant to bring him in to pay for the boots. For the trip out to the camp, Sheriff Hayden took with him Minot Bird and another boy. Cullen, according to my grandfather's story, was a man of short, heavy stature and an unusually large head. He was a New Brunswicker that had come over to settle in this part of Maine. Sheriff Hayden was well liked by all that he'd come to know, and had come to know him. When the sheriff got to the camp, he explained to Cullen why he had come, and being late in the day, suggested that on account of the long trip back to town, that it would be logical to stop for the night. And according to the witnesses, told Cullen that if he disappeared in the night, they would automatically take care of the situation, giving him thus a chance to return to New Brunswick. In the middle of the night, Bird and his friend were awakened and found that Cullen had killed the sheriff with an axe. He threatened the boys that unless they helped bring in wood for a fire, that he would do the same to them. The boys worked back and forth, going further and further into the woods for fuel, and at that time they planned their getaway. And the next trip out at the far end of their path they'd made for wood, they took off for Mapleton. Cullen gave chase, but the boys were able to keep ahead of him, and when they reached the first houses in the settlement, they started such a hoop and holler that Cullen took fright and went across the fields that were partially bare, across to the Ashland-Mapleton Road, where he had a home. When the boys had got into town and reported the happenings of the night, a posse was formed, went out to the Cullen home, and asked Mrs. Cullen if they'd seen Jim. She was as afraid of the man as anybody, and said, "I don't know," but pointed to the cellar. The posse then threatened to burn down the house if Cullen didn't come out. Cullen came out and was taken into Mapleton under handcuffs, and from there, after an escort was assembled, put on the express wagon and started for Presque Isle. On the way into Presque Isle, at a point near where the Mapleton-Presque Isle Road now has been relocated to go around the air base, a band of masked men came out and stopped the wagon, took Cullen, hanged him to a tree, and subsequently the body was brought into Presque Isle and put on display in a store window in Presque Isle. Later, according to the story, Cullen was buried in approximately the same area south of the Ashland-Mapleton Road. Minot Bird, one of the boys that was there that night of the killing, later lived in Ashland, and being a very small man, the report has it that from the result of his scare that night, he never grew beyond his stature of that night. Let us turn now to historical notes taken when I gave a ride to Frank W. Howes of Oxbow down over the Route 11 road southward from the mouth of the Oxbow Road. Mr. Howes was born in 1876 and at age 10 drove team taking supplies up a Roostook above Oxbow and continued to live in Oxbow to the present. Incidentally, these notes were taken January 10th, 1965. Mr. Howes drove team on a buckboard hauling hunters to Oxbow from Holton until the railroad came to Oakfield about 1892, which then became the pickup point for sports coming to the sporting camps up the Roostook. Mr. Howes pointed out that the first time he was over the road between the Oxbow Turn and Knowles Corner, that the farms along the road had fields in various stages of small new growth of forest on them, and that the fields occupied all suitable farmland the length of the road. Though some of these farm sites are obvious today, several show no evidence of ever having been occupied. An order from the Oxbow Junction on Route 11 southward. First is the Ben Condon place, sold to William Rowe Jr. about 1886. The next place on the opposite side of the road, that is the north side, just beyond the Oxbow Turn, was the Ellis place. Third, just about 300 feet northerly from the mouth of Griswold Road, was the Dr. Alley place on the opposite side of the highway. Here, about 3 rods back from the road, 2 or 3 graves occupied the site at one time. A recent check has shown that there is presently no sign of them. Next place was the Booty Hotel on top of ridge later, on top of the ridge, which later became the Jim Sweat place when Jim married the widow Booty. Then it became the Sweat Hotel. Most of these farms took in travelers and toters hauling freight from Bangor and therefore became known as hotels. The next farm, or the next point of interest, was Lime Hill, the first high ground after going through the long swamp south of the Township 9 Range 5 and 8 Range 5 town line. At the foot of the hill, and several rods southerly off the road, Jerry Betts burned lime, in which operation Mr. Howes helped him for the will to get lime for the Will Libby place in Oxbow and the Trafton place at Squawpan. At the top of this hill, the Jerry Betts place was on the north side. Here Jim Dorman used to shift horses driving stage between Fort Kent and Patton. Entering the driveway on the left here and taking the first left up onto a knoll, you will find at the foot of a large pine a gravestone marking the grave of the Booty Boys, which the stone says died when their camp burned in the night. On the easterly edge of the Betts site, on the same side of the road, were several graves which were exposed about 1959 when a gravel pit was opened there. The next place southerly on the road, now known as Camp Violet, was formerly the James McManus place. Jim married Laura Booty. Her children, Laura and Natalie McManus, and after widowed, married Piper, whose children were Lewis and Oma, and Laura Piper McLean. Mr. Piper led a move to the Oxbow. Laura became the wife of John McLean. At the Piper place, southerly side of the highway, and to the left of the mouth of the Hughes Road across to Oxbow, at several graves marking the burial place of Mrs. Howes and their children, all of whom died within a few weeks of each other. The next place, Llewellyn Powers Farm, that wasn't the governor. Mr. Powers sold to Frank McManus, Sr. Jim McManus, his son, and the farm known as the Jim McManus Farm into the present day. John Dunbar Farm at the top of Dunbar Hill was temporarily occupied by his son-in-law, L.G. Spirin, and then sold to Frank McManus, Jr., who occupied it until about 1940. Beyond the Cold Spring, on the south side of the road where there is now a highway picnic ground, was a large set of buildings well back from the road. The farm cleared here had an acre and a half or two of apple orchard. On the opposite side of the road, on the straightaway to the Muskeg, was another farm with field that occupied that whole slope. On the west side of the hill, approaching Knowles Corner, was the Gideon Harris place. His sister married Dr. Tabble at Smyrna Mills. On the opposite side of the road here, on the side of the slope, was the Frank Chase farm. Chase married Gideon's sister. The site of the store at Knowles Corner was first occupied by Nolan, who later sold to Knowles, after whom the corner is named. On the Smyrna Mills Road, soon after leaving Knowles Corner, and on the south side of the road, was the Charlie Condon place. Approaching the present Lugi residence on the north side was the Sam Akins place. On the opposite side of the road was a Sherb Sleeper place. Our notes on the Route 11 occupants concludes here, and I'll mention two other clearings made by the early settlers that have now gone back to the woods. Henry Hayden cleared a field on the road between Oxbow and the west branch of Oncalcus Deadwater, just beyond the mouth of the branch going into Pongkig Lake. By 1885, Hayden moved into the Oxbow. His brother lived at Presque Isle. In 1955, or thereabouts, this field was cut for pulpwood. Another clearing, which we hear of from time to time, was the John Goddard farm on the south side of Mooslook Lake. This farm included fields and a large pasture for his mules used for logging each winter. Norman Currier reports having observed in a trip to the farm that he had noted what appeared to be several graves because of the sunken ground at each site. Let us turn our interest now to the California Road. From time to time, I've had inquiries asking how the road got its name. And in answer to one of these inquiries, I answered as follows. Your inquiry of June 21st relating to the California Road leads to several questions for which I cannot give you specific answers, and suggest that your search may be long to find the final answer to several of the points you raise. I have asked a great many much older than myself some of your same questions. Mr. Frank Call of the James W. Sewell Company in Old Town told me that he had searched for the basis of the road's name and never found it, but that he had determined that the road existed in 1849, and that Aroostook County and New Brunswick adventurers answering the call of the California Gold Rush could have started west over this road from Ashland, and thereby given cause for it to be called the California Road. I have also been told that one town on the St. John shore just above Perth Andover, above the mouth of the Aroostook River, were one of these groups that answered the gold rush, and that area later became known as the California Settlement. For that reason, I had clipped in 1964 this notice from the Bangor paper, which reported that Mr. Dross was born in the California Settlement, New Brunswick, April 13, 1913. The road probably was not developed before 1836, when Ashland was settled as Township 11. Ashland was incorporated in 1862. The town immediately developed as a center for logging operations to the west, because it was a point on the Aroostook River which served as a supply road from the St. John River at Perth Andover that gave logical access to waterways to the west, and these drained into the St. John River to carry logs to the mills at the city of St. John. The road was therefore developed to touch these waterways at strategic points on the river systems, the Big Machias Lake on the Big Machias River, a dam site, another dam site at the foot of First Musquaquic Lake, Harvey Pond and Long Lake Dam at the foot of Long Lake on the Allegash system, and Seven Islands, an ideal location for a farm to grow the much-needed hay. And the road then reached the Quebec border between the Big Black River and Depot Stream, thus permitting supplies and men to get into the woods, both from Maine and Canada. My available records only go back to 1864-66 era, but I'm sure that it is a good estimate that the following men who had woods operations and whose permits I hold had a good deal to do with the development of the California Road to serve their needs. These operators were J.N.S. Glazier of Fredericton, New Brunswick, R. Rankin of St. John, New Brunswick, A.J. Flint of Ashland, Gilman Savage of Fort Kent, W.H. Carey of Holton, Francis Ferguson of St. John, New Brunswick, Clayton and Jewett of Mercedes and Ashland, John H. Burgoyne of Ashland, and E.G. Dunn of Ashland. In these years, their operations included the following towns, which would be served by the California Road: Township 12, Range 11, Township 14, Range 13, Township 16, 13, Township 15, 13, Township 13, 15, Township 13, 12, Township 14, Range 14, 12, Range 9, and Township 14, Range 9. The financing was by the Woods operators, and of course included many besides these I list above. I know of no larger scheme for the road other than for logging. Some topog maps between the Allegash and the Big Machias Lake do not show the road, but it did indeed connect these points also. Present roads follow the old road in places. Where tote wagon wheels cut the ground, the old road is easily followed, where off the present gravel road.